late to cash in my insured abs? I think I need a moment, I tell the stunt coordinator, who is, I'm pretty sure, insane. A 30-something woman with dark hair and a dead-eyed stare. I adjust the strap that's digging into my left little guy. As stunts go, this is the one I've been looking forward to the least. What, getting scared, Hero? She claps me on the shoulder. Hero is her nickname for me, which, given how scared I am, is probably ironic. Like calling Lonnie Shrimp. Really flattering, in other words. I just want to, write my will first, I reply. Or at least I think I do. My pulse thrums so loud in my ears, I can't hear anything else. I stare down, down, down the 50-foot drop onto the green screen landing. If I fall now, I'll land flatter than a pancake. At least my only consolation is that the camera guy filming me is coming along. You know, maybe we should take a break. Who's hungry? You hungry? I ask the camera guy. He pops on his chewing gum, giving me a bored, no-bullshit gaze. Am I the only one who thinks this is nuts? Can it, Hero? My stunt coordinator tugs on the wires of my harness, triple-checking that I won't, in fact, hit the ground flatter than a pancake. We haven't established a safe word yet, I say. Stall for time, my mind chants. Stall for life. I mean, you've got me in this compromising position, and I barely know you. She rolls her eyes and radios to the assistant director. I told you we should have let Luis do the stunt. Luis? You're double. Wait, he wanted to? Want me to get him, Hero? She draws out the last word. Yes?
Nope,
I squeak. Good. The stunt coordinator turns back to the cameraman and begins checking his harness, too. He keeps messing with the settings on his camera as they talk about the scene. I tug on my collar, staring down, down, down at all the people below me. I'm beginning to regret my decision to do most of my own stunts. The scene sounds simple enough. Carmendor's running for safety. In this part of the movie, the Nox lay siege to a council hearing, and the entire building on Andromeda Earth, the homeworld of the Federation, goes up in flames. Carmendor, me, rushes down a hallway, pursued by 7 Nox knights. He's heading toward a dead end, but because Carmendor is genetically enhanced, he can bust through the window at the end of the hall, hurtling himself to the next building's rooftop to escape. That's where I find myself now, running away from the Nox, busting through the glass window, and letting the cables take me 50 feet down onto a landing pad. 50 feet doesn't sound that high until you're looking down at where you're supposed to land, but I must have failed to realize that I'm not the Federation Prince, and my bones are not made of titanium, and I will break just as easily as the next guy. I swallow the bile rising in my throat. Run, spin, knee, wall, I keep reminding myself, remembering the rehearsal for this shot. Run, elbow, backstep, jump. Run, kiss ass goodbye, jump. Suddenly, I feel something buzz in my tattered uniform. It's been made to look singed at the edges and caked in soot, like I've just, you know, been through a siege. I reach into my jacket. Unknown. 3:47 p.m. So, about your question yesterday, where would you go? Anywhere, anytime in the history of you. Hey, Hero, you ready to rock and roll? Miss Scary Eyes calls to me. God bless my poor unfortunate soul. Do I have a choice? Down below, Eamon, the director, barks a laugh. We got the paramedic standing by. You've got brass balls, Darian. I respect you. I follow the stunt coordinator back down the hallway, specially built for this fight scene. It's one continuous camera shot, so no mistakes. Run, spin, knee, wall. Run, elbow, back step, jump. Run, kiss ass goodbye, jump. I've practiced this. I can do this. 3:48 p.m. I honestly don't know. I wouldn't go anywhere alone. It's a big universe out there. I'd need a buddy system. Unknown. 3:48 p.m. LOL, scaredy cat. Then where would we go? Quit texting your girlfriend, hero. Get ready. 3:49 p.m. The frozen tundra of the Artesa galaxy is supposed to be nice. Unknown. 3:49 p.m. Brisk. I like it. Lover boy, the stunt coordinator snaps. Can someone take the kid's phone away? Kid. I try not to let the word sting as Gale rushes up and snatches the phone out of my hand. I was just making sure my will was in place. And my insurance, I add under my breath. The cameraman moves his $100,000 equipment closer, bracing to follow me down the hallway. Is it too late to opt out? I'm not good at this. I should probably just... Get ready, Miss Scary Eyes says, and radios down to Eamon. We're set. 3, 2, the AD says. I turn around, rocking back and forth on my feet. Get into the moment. Slip on Carmendor like a Halloween mask that still smells like rubber. Breathe in, breathe out. Start running. Go, the AD directs, and then shouts, Action! A horn blares. I take off down the hall. A Nox comes out of the first doorway. I spin on my heels, ducking his punch. A piece of stucco wall pops over my head. Fake gunshot. And three more go off down the hallway. I grab the Nox by the collar and send his face into the fake wall. And boom! The AD shouts. I stumble on command, feet slipping out from under me. Another Nox emerges from the next doorway and slams the tip of his rifle against my forehead. Fires. I dodge, grabbing the gun, and elbow him in the side. I backstep, aim, fire. The Nox is blown backward on ripcords. Final cue! Roars the AD. Tossing the gun to the side, I hurtle the downed Nox, dodging another knight trying to grapple onto me. I can feel the harness digging into me. My heart's in my throat. I can almost see the fire, the taste of fake blood in my mouth, the stucco falling from the ceiling, the screams of people trapped in the Federation building as it goes up in flames, the titanium in my bones hurting, because for Carmendor, they never stop hurting, never will. His humanity rebelling against the unnatural inside of him. And for a moment, I look at the window, and I'm not afraid. Run, kiss ass goodbye, and... I launch myself out of the window, arms pinwheeling, air rushing around me faster and faster. The green screen floor comes so close, so fast, between one heartbeat and the next, my life flashes before my eyes. I don't regret most of it, except one minor, inconsequential thing. I never asked my mystery friend's name. The harness tightens, pressing against my chest, squeezing the breath out of me. I land. Feet spread like I've been practicing on the green screen ground, right where they want me. Nailed it. I hold the landing for 1 second, 2, and cut! Eamon yells from the ground. He runs up to me and slaps me on the back. Amazing! Great job! That was sick! Thanks, I wheeze, tugging at the harness. I relish my feet planted on sweet, sweet ground. My hands are shaking. I push my thumbs into the harness so the director doesn't notice. From the window, the stunt coordinator applauds. Perfect! You could be a stuntman, she adds. I feel the ropes on my harness begin to tighten again, as if they're about to hoist me up. Except next time, try not to scream like a girl. That's not very PC, I yell up, my voice shaking, before I realize what she said. Wait, next time? Eamon claps me on the shoulder. Word of advice, don't grimace like the harness is pinching those pretty brass balls. You don't want to have to record sound for this scene in post, right? That'd be embarrassing. He motions for my stunt coordinator to set me down again, and one of the assistants comes to unharness me. Okay, 5-minute recess. Thank the gods of special effects. The moment the assistant unstraps me, I make a break for the restroom in the corner of the building, because all the jostling has not been kind to my bladder. But as I sidle through the crowd of PAs loitering around the snack bar, I get this weird deja vu, like I've passed someone familiar. When I look again, there's no one I recognize. No one besides all the lucky PAs cramming donuts in their faces. I duck into the bathroom and do my business, but my hands are still shaking from the stunt. It's the adrenaline messing with my eyes, my brain, making me hallucinate that I'm seeing people. Shake it off, Darian, I tell myself. I would splash water on my face, but it'll ruin the special effects makeup on my forehead. A shard of glass embedded into my hairline. A line of blood curving down my temple. I'm just being paranoid. No one's here trying to snap pictures of me. I mean, I don't even have any friends to sell me out. The longer I spend in this oasis of conflicting aromas, one of the PAs stationed bowls of mango potpourri everywhere, the longer I prolong going back out there and doing it again. Mark told me that doing my own stunts would be good press, and I did most of my own stunts on Seaside Cove, but this is different. Just another way I'm not the Federation Prince. He isn't scared of heights. Or flying through space with a 0.1% possibility of landing his target. Darian Freeman, he's scared of it all.
L. When my phone pulses with the wake-up alarm at its usual ungodly hour, I reach for it, swiping clumsily for the unlock button to shut the alarm up. But it's not just the alarm. I have a message. From Carmendor. I roll over in my bed with my cell phone. The morning light peeks in through star-patterned blackout curtains, creating yellow ribbons across the carpet. In the distance, someone is mowing the lawn at 6:30 a.m. Oh, summer. I tap the message icon and the text pulls up with a soft whoosh. Carmendor, 11:23 p.m. Hey, sorry I didn't text back earlier. I had to save myself from an assassination attempt. 23 times. Anyway, this might seem a bit late in the game, but... what's your name? I bite the inside of my lip, trying not to smile. 6:34 a.m. You were busy saving the galaxy. No need to be sorry. And I thought Carmendor knew everything. P.S. Good morning. Across the hallway, the twins' alarm goes off. Screeching sound that Chloe will snooze off at least 3 times before they finally get up. I roll off the bed, sneaking a look underneath at the costume folded in a cardboard box. I still have to pinch myself. Dad's costume. His actual costume. Here. I left Mom's safely in the attic, where no one, not Chloe or Cal or the Nox King himself, will find it. I grab yesterday's work clothes and a towel from the main closet and pause. I move slowly toward my computer and tap the space bar to wake it up. Rebel Gunner has 30,000 followers and climbing. Still, not a dream. I should be wary because this universe never lets me be lucky. But I shove that thought to the back of my mind. I take a quick shower before Chloe or Cal can bully their way into the bathroom and then wiggle into my day-old uniform. I'll never get the smell of vegan fritters off me. Carmendor, 6:41 a.m.
There's nothing good about this morning. And we both know that I don't know anything.
6:41 a.m. So I'm not in Cleo's files? Man, I feel left out, Carmendor. Carmendor, 6:42 a.m.
Or you're too important to be in her systems. You might be classified.
Classified as a raging idiot, I mutter, pulling my wet hair into a ponytail. I glance at the reflection in the mirror on the far wall. A girl with red hair from a box, her mom's brown eyes, and a birthmark shaped like a starfish on her neck. Wearing a frumpy Treat Yo' Pumpkin t-shirt and holy, greasy thrift store jeans. I wonder what Carmendor thinks I look like. Probably better than I do. 6:43 a.m.
Alas, you found my secret.
I am much too important for your trivialness. You shall address me as your supreme intergalactic empress. Carmendor, 6:44 a.m.
So you're a girl. Sorry, that came out weird. It's an observation, casual-like. You're a girl. Ugh, I'm digging myself a hole, aren't I?
6:45 a.m. Yes. Yes, you are.
Danielle!
Catherine's voice calls up from the kitchen. I curse, stuffing the costume into a duffel bag and slinging it over my shoulder. It's missing a few pieces. The star wings, for one, and the crown. I looked everywhere in that trunk, but they weren't there. Catherine probably threw them away when she chucked everything up in the attic. I start down the stairs as Carmendor sends another text. Carmendor, 6:48 a.m.
I'm really good at that, digging myself into holes, making impossible promises, groveling, endangering my own mental sanity. More groveling, and it's part of the job. So, I am Worms, your supreme intergalactic empress.
I bite the inside of my cheek, trying not to laugh, then hear Chloe in the kitchen.
God, I know, okay? She snaps. I didn't think it'd be so hard to find a stupid costume.
I don't think they're just costumes, Calliope replies hesitantly as I enter the kitchen.
Like, there's a whole community of people who dress up for conventions.
It's called cosplay, I say before I can stop myself. Chloe turns her dark-eyed glare at me.
We get it, Elle. You're a huge nerd. But guess what? Everyone likes that star show now. It's like retro chic or something.
She screws up her mouth.
You probably know where to get a costume, right?
Fear twists in my stomach. I clutch the strap of my duffel bag. No, I say.
Darlings, Catherine says. You don't have to click your heels just because everyone else does. You girls like what you like. Don't be like Danielle.
Don't be like Danielle. If ever I had a cue to leave, that was it. Ducking my head, I pull my duffel bag higher and quickly escape through the front door. I hurry toward the end of the street when, with a roar, the pumpkin skids onto the pavement and comes to an exhausted stop. Sage leans over.
Get in, loser. We're getting the good spot today.
I jump in and glance back at the house one last time with unease, remembering the twins' conversation. I grip my bag tightly. It'll be fine. Starfield is just a phase for them. Soon it'll disappear like Princess Amara through the Black Nebula and never be spoken of again.
Darian. Look at me. I glide Jessica to a stop. We've been waltzing through this ballroom for 2 hours, a herd of PAs following to sprinkle fresh ash and dirt over the map of my failed footprints. Focus. I cup Jessica's cheeks and whisper, "You ignite me." She presses her dark red lips against mine, and the world spins. It spins and spins and spins. I can hear the swell of music in my head. That moment in the TV show, the sweep of the wobbly camera around half-baked costumes with cardboard props. And for a moment, I am Carmendor. I am... And done! Eamon shouts. Reality drops on me like the Prospero out of the Mars 2 skyline. Straight and fast. Carmendor is ripped out of me so quickly, I'm left breathless and hollow. Or as I like to call it, Darian Freeman every day. Jessica steps away and rubs her lipstick off my lips with a thumb. She smiles. And where did you learn how to kiss? Well, I've had about 2 hours of practice by now, I reply. Cheekily, I hope. With the best kisser in Hollywood. Her mouth twitches in amusement. Dark lipstick. The same on my mouth. Cherry and whatever was left of her lunch. She taps my chin. The scar. And floats past me off the set. I follow her out to the lot, unbuttoning my sweaty jacket. I need to tell the costume person to steam clean this thing before tomorrow. It's going to start growing trees. Thank God that's over. She unsnaps her curly hair extensions, tossing them at her assistant. I thought my lips would... Darian! Our heads turn toward the main gate. The security guard isn't at his post. But then again, it's dinner time, and there's a security camera. We see a whole gaggle of girls. Not like I think a group of teenagers is a flock or anything, but there's a whole... a group of them, and they're all staring at me like they're the ducks and I've got a piece of sorta moldy bread to feed them. Or I am the piece of moldy bread. It's him! It's Darian! Another girl screams. They have their phones out, flashes sparking in the dusk, as if they want to catch the whole moment on fire. And everyone, from the PAs to the cameramen to fracking Jessica Stone, is staring at them. Your adoring fans? Jess asks. Yeah. I rake a hand through my hair. I should get Gail on it, or my Lonnie. I cringe again. I mean, bodyguard. A couple of the PAs are pointing at the crowd and snickering. Wow. Jessica shakes her head. Makes me glad I didn't take that Vampire Diaries part. Right. Because she's a real actor, and I'm just the dude from the soap opera. They're just fans, I say. Don't you ever fangirl? Of course, she replies, folding her arms over her chest. She juts her chin toward the fans. But I've never stalked anyone. It's part of fan culture, I say. Trying not to remember the other side of fan culture that is Fishmouth. Fans like that are one in a million. But the memory of that girl charging me creates a sick, sinking feeling in my gut. They're monsters, but they're my monsters. Jess lifts an eyebrow. Monsters? I spread my arms. Come to rejoice at the great church of Darian Freeman. Her perplexed look slowly devolves into a deviously white smile. She gives me a bracing pat on the shoulder. Then we should go see your congregation. What? Oh, no. I don't think Mark would... Who's Mark? My... I stop. There's no way I'm going to say Dad. And manager isn't much better. He would not approve of me doing this without Lonnie, which makes it enticing. No one. Never mind. Come on, let's do it. We barely make it to the barrier. I give the crowd Sebastian's, my character's, bro nod. The girls go nuts. One shoves a picture into my hands. It's of me shirtless, pulled from the Teen Vogue photo shoot last year. Hi, I say, faking enthusiasm as I take her Sharpie and sign it. How did you guys find me so fast? I try to make it a joke, which is the best way to frame a serious question. The footage, the guy beside her says. Tall, gelled hair. It was awesome. I can't believe they put it on Twitter, squeals another. Oh my God, that scene today was amazing. I loved the kiss. I pause mid-autograph. I've already signed 3 photos and an arm. The kiss today? Footage. I glance over at Jess, whose big white smile has faltered. She's thinking the same thing as I am. We have a snake in the water. A leak. Even an actor from a dumb teenage soap opera knows that's not good.
Jess, what's it like kissing Darian? Isn't he amazing?
Interrupts a girl in pigtails. I hand back her notebook. Jess laughs.
He's a terrible kisser.
Hey, I say. I am not.
Oh, did I hurt your feelings?
Positively shattered.
They're so cute together,
someone cries. Cameras flash. Jess wraps her arms around mine and tugs me toward the costume trailer. I give a guy back his Sharpie, having half-signed his T-shirt.
Well, you guys are awesome, but we should really get going. Dare?
Yeah. Hey, it was nice meeting you all, I say to the group, waving and smiling like we're both in a beauty pageant. I don't think I exhale until we get to the trailer. My jacket sticks to my shoulders when I shrug it off.
You're way too nice, you know.
Jess comes out from behind one of the racks, now wearing into street clothes and pulling her hair into a high ponytail.
You can't waste more than 2 minutes on stuff like that. Tops.
Nah, I say with a shrug. They're nice people. Sometimes, anyway. I step out of my pants, hop into my gym shorts, and pull a hoodie over my head.
Hey, do you think it's someone working for the movie? Who ratted the footage, I mean?
Jess shrugs.
It could be a PA.
And if it is, they're going to get a piece of my mind. Trust nobody around here, Dare. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a date.
A date?
I say. With... She blinks twice.
Like I said, trust nobody.
Then she leaves in a twirl of dark hair and cherry blossom perfume.
She's a firecracker, that one,
says Nicky, the wardrobe manager, clicking his tongue to the roof of his mouth. Tell me about it, I reply, unable to wash her cherry kiss from my lips. I fish into my gym shorts pocket for my phone. A glowing blue message is waiting for me. Unknown. 6:06 p.m.
It's L. Just L. L.
A name. Her name. L. A nickname? Short for a horrendously long name? Eleanor? Janelle? Elizabeth? There's a whole universe of possibility in it. L. I add her name to my contacts, able to put a pin into the idea of her, and keep it steady, because now I know her name. I didn't think a name could do that. Turn a wispy idea of a person into, well, a person. Suddenly I'm wondering what someone named L looks like. Blonde hair? Brown, pale skin or dark, large eyes, but what color? Are her teeth straight, or does she have a cute overbite? When she smiles, is it crooked? Is she tall, short, curvy, or skinny?
L.
What are you smiling at? Nicky asks loudly. Oh, nothing. I'll see you tomorrow, I reply, swiping off the lock screen and exiting the trailer. The girls begin screaming my name, but it's not my name that I'm thinking about anymore.
L. Rebel Gunners at 43,000 followers and counting. I'm working on a post instead of working on my cosplay, because no matter how many YouTube tutorials I watch, I'm still terrified of slicing through Dad's costume. But I have 19 days. In the meantime, there's Starfield news, movie news, and all 43,000 of my followers are waiting for me to pass judgment. I had a link to a video of the now notorious leaked kissing scene from the reboot next to what I think is its TV show parallel. Episode 33, A Knox to Remember. It looked like the ballroom scene, the one before Princess Samara's coronation, when the Knox attacked. But I can't be sure. I rewind the video and replay it. Darian Freeman holding Jessica Stone's face, his mouth moving in words I can't make out, and then drawing slowly into a kiss before the camera shakes and cuts away. Yeah. Definitely episode 33. You can tell by the balustrades in the background, the ash on the ballroom floor. One thing's for sure, I write in closing, Darian Freeman's Carmen Dore uniform is the wrong color blue. Then I hit post, 11:34 p.m. Everyone has gone to bed by now, so I quietly slide out of my chair and pad down the stairs. The house is so dark I can barely see. But I know it blindfolded, having snuck around in the dark for years. In the kitchen, I open one of the cabinets, reaching in the back for the new jar of peanut butter, and then grab a spoon from the clean dishwasher. I'll have to put away the dishes in the morning, and Catherine will probably scold me for letting them sit all night, but I'm too tired and hungry to care. As I scrape another spoonful from the bottom of the jar, I hear something shift at the table.
I wondered where you stashed that,
says the cool, soft voice of my stepmother. I freeze, the spoon stuck in my mouth. I turn slowly toward the darkened figure.
Turn on the light, sweetie. We aren't Neanderthals.
I reach over to the switch and begrudgingly flip it on. I already know the scene I'll find on that table. The brightness of the light makes my eyes water. Catherine is still in her work clothes, a $500 wrap dress she can't afford with hair curled up on top of her head. She looks tired.
Sorry, I say, trying to come up with an excuse to explain why I've been caught red-handed with super creamy Peter Pan peanut butter, but my mind fails me. We all have our guilty pleasures, she says, tapping manicured nails on the rim of her empty wine glass. Her cheeks are warmed, and her eyeliner faded, flakes of mascara scattered around her eyes. The last time I saw her look like this, well, human, was the day Dad died. I pull the spoon out of my mouth and quickly screw the top onto the jar.
Yeah, sorry, I just...
Don't apologize. I have Rocky Road hidden in the back of the freezer, she replies. I blink at her.
The step monster eats Rocky Road? I make a mental note to check the freezer when she's not around. She tilts her head as if she didn't just admit to having ice cream, which I'm pretty sure is not paleo in the freezer.
No matter what I do, I can't get rid of him, you know. She says in a voice so soft I almost don't hear. First you, but, oh, I knew you'd be just like him. But now the twins.
The twins? She waves a hand.
They're obsessed with that thing. Star Trek?
Starfield.
The show Robin liked. Her eyelids flutter shut. He's everywhere.
I fold my arms over my chest. Well, the twins only like it because of Darian Freeman.
What's so special about it? Catherine snaps, her eyes wide open. Every time I see the logo for that stupid show, I think of Robin. There's no point to it. It's for children. Why does it have to be stupid or childish? I ask, my voice trembling a little. It taught me a lot of things, like about friendship and loyalty, and how to think critically and look for all sides of a narrative. It helped me taught you? Catherine shakes her head. How can a show teach you anything? How can you learn about the world if you're buried in a fantasy? How can you think something stupid if Dad liked it so much? I say. He loved that show. Well, he should have loved other things more. The room is deadly silent. Catherine clears her throat, as if she remembers that it's not ladylike to yell and is afraid the neighbors might hear. If he cared half as much about his family, we might not be in this mess, she says in her usual sticky sweet tone. Scraping by, cutting coupons, alone. Is that why you're selling the house? I ask. Because my dad had the audacity to die in a car accident without buying enough life insurance to pay for all your stuff? Catherine's eyes turn hard and sharp. You know nothing about the world. I know that you don't have to sell the house, I say. I know that you could get a real job. My job is real, Danielle. I ball up my hands. It might not be my decision, but it isn't her house either. You talk a lot about how stupid it is to like a TV show, but you're the one living in a fantasy world, I say. You're the one being childish. With a crack, Catherine's manicured hand strikes the side of my face. Go to bed, Danielle, she says ever so softly. You have work in the morning. I don't have to be told twice. I throw the spoon on the table, run from my room, and dive into bed. Holding a hand to my stinging cheek, I pull the covers over my head and untuck my phone from my pocket. 11:52 p.m. Car? Carmendor, 11:52 p.m. What are you still doing up? 11:52 p.m. I can't sleep. Why are you still up? Carmendor, 11:53 p.m. Same. I press my phone against my mouth, still angry with Catherine. Angry that she thinks she has to do things alone. She's not alone. She has the twins and their real dad, wherever he is. And she has Franco's terrible owner, Giorgio. She has the country club and her friends at the salon and her clients and her parents, although they live in Savannah, and apparently it's such a chore to drive to see us. She doesn't understand what being truly alone means. Her life is crowded compared to mine, and I'm angry that I thought, even for a second, that she had room for me. Carmendor, 11:54 p.m. Do you want to talk about it? Not wanting to brag, but I'm the master at listening. 11:55 p.m. Got an award in kindergarten for it, did you? Carmendor, 11:55 p.m. My crowning achievement. And I don't tell secrets either. I'm a steel trap. I lay the phone on my chest. For some reason, all I can think about is that leaked video being replayed again and again. To the people who haven't watched the show. They don't know what he says. His mouth is too blurry to read. But I know that scene. I know those words by heart. You are not alone, Ablena. And then she kisses him. In the right universe, the possible one, I don't want to win a contest to see the premiere, to watch that famous scene on the big screen. I wouldn't have to. In a perfect world, I'd be buying two tickets to the midnight release at the local theater. I'd wait for Dad to get off work and we'd go together. And maybe at that midnight release, I'd see a guy across the theater dressed in a Federation uniform, and we'd lock eyes and know that this was the good universe. Maybe a guy with dark hair and chocolate eyes and... For a moment, Darian Freeman flashes across my mind. Startled, I quickly shake away the image. No, abort. Not Darian Freeman. Not that it matters. Pick up my phone and answer Carmendor. 11:57 p.m. Thanks, but I'm good,
Good night, Carr. His reply lights up my phone almost instantly. Carmendor, 11:57 p.m. Good night, Your Supreme Intergalactic Highness. I hide the phone under my pillow, because I'm not a princess. And this is the impossible universe, where nothing good ever happens.
Darian. I've been checking my phone all day. That is, when I'm allowed to have my phone on me. And yet, here I am, checking my phone again. Nothing. Not since last night. Did I say something wrong? Underneath a parking light on the lot, I rub my eyes in exhaustion, waving to Jess and her entourage of equally gorgeous girlfriends. I don't even know their names, and I think she met two of them today on set. Everyone's leaving, filtering out of the looming black gates like a river of bobbing, tired heads. My stunt coordinator claps me on the arm as she passes. "Good work today," she says with a smile. "A few more takes and your footwork would have been almost as good as Cary Elwes." "I almost stabbed Calvin in the face with my sword," I remind her. "Calvin Rolfe is our reboot UC, and from what I can tell, he's less than thrilled about playing second fiddle to a kid almost 10 years his junior." "He had it coming, hero. Get some shut-eye. You look terrible." Night shoots aren't my favorite. "Oh, poor widow hero," she teases, and gives my head a scrubbing before strolling off toward the parking lot. Lonnie pulls up to the gates in a black SUV. At 3:30 in the morning, my fans are nowhere to be seen. But he still assists me into the vehicle like I'm about to get assassinated. My phone beeps. "L?" I glance at the clock on the dash. 3:32 a.m. She shouldn't be awake at this hour. I pull out my phone anyway and frown. Not L, but another unknown number. Unknown. 3:32 a.m. Killer skills, bro. Link. Against my better judgment, I tap the link. It goes straight to a video of today's shoot. Basically, me almost stabbing Calvin in the eye. I wince. But even worse than my poor swordsmanship are the comments. I close out of the link and delete the text for good measure. "Something wrong?" Lonnie asks. "Long day," I reply. He drives me back to the hotel and parks in the back. We enter through the emergency exit, and he follows me all the way to my room, where he tells me he'll pick me up at 7:30 sharp. Then he hands me a protein bar. "You look weak," he says. I take it, kind of touched by his thoughtfulness. "Thanks." Even after I shower off the 8 hours of failed footwork, after a night of being blown out of a spaceship hatch, and put on clean clothes, I'm not tired enough to go to bed. I should be. It's been an exhausting day, and usually, whenever we're shooting seaside, I crash harder than a cow shot with an elephant tranquilizer. But I lie awake and keep thinking about that video. Who could have filmed it? Jess already asked the PA manager to rake everyone through the gutters. I heard him screaming at the PAs from the soundstage. Half of them are probably too traumatized to take another job in production ever again. I flop onto my back and waste I don't know how long trying to count the popcorn kernels in the stucco ceiling. Eventually, my mind wanders. What's Elle doing? I wonder if she stares at the ceiling, too. Counting sheep, or doing what I do when I can't sleep. Namely, wondering what would have happened if Barbara Gordon never answered the door in the killing joke. As the red-lettered clock on my nightstand blinks to 5:58, I roll out of bed. 5:58 a.m. Hey, are you awake? She's probably still asleep. I'd be asleep right now, but I can't. And this room is suffocating. I grab a hoodie from the floor around my exploded suitcase and pull it on, taking the key card from the TV stand and slipping out the door. The hallway is eerily lit, like in those horror movies where an axe murderer is just around the corner. I pull up my hood, by habit, not because I'm emo or anything, and set off toward the stairwell. As in most hotels, the door to the roof is rigged with an alarm. But also, as in most hotels, the alarm doesn't work. Probably. I push the lever timidly to make sure. The door squeaks open, but no alarm. So I shoulder it open the rest of the way and escape onto the rooftop. There's not much up here. Air conditioners, a water tower, a storage hut of sorts. I slide off one of my shoes and wedge it in the doorway so I don't get locked out, and sit at the edge of the building. Mark would flip. "You're too close," he'd rage. "What if you fell off?" I look down and down and down along the side of the building. My heart thrums in my throat. I hate heights, but there's something quiet about rooftops. Peaceful. The way the city sounds like a distant, muted ambience. It might sound stupid, but up here, I feel most myself. And these days, I don't feel that way often. Between having to put on a face for the cameras, or for other industry people, or for the paparazzi, Darian Freeman seems to always be on. The only other time I feel myself is when... well, when I talk to Elle. And that's stupid, because she's the only person who doesn't know I'm me. How could I be most myself when I'm lying? My phone buzzes. L. 6:04 a.m. Sadly, I am. Why are you up? 6:04 a.m. I haven't gone to sleep yet. L. 6:04 a.m. OMG, go to sleep, weirdo. 6:05 a.m. Ha ha, it's busy work saving the galaxy. The moment I send the message, I wish I hadn't. I've been trying to fill Carmendor's shadow for 8 hours today. The moment I send the message, I wish I hadn't. I've been trying to fill Carmendor's shadow for 8 hours today. For a moment, I just want to be me. 6:05 a.m. No, not saving the galaxy. That was stupid. I don't really do that. L. 6:06 a.m. So you're a real person behind your strapping exterior. Color me shocked, really. 6:06 a.m. I'm sensing some sarcasm here. L. 6:07 a.m. It's okay, I can forgive you. As long as you're not really, like, bald. I sigh, knowing exactly where this conversation is heading. To what I look like. Who I am. It's best to just stick to Carmendor. I do look like him more often than usual these days, thanks to my makeup artist. L. 6:09 a.m. You are bald, aren't you? That's your big secret. You're really bald. 6:10 p.m. I am ashamed you think that. I promise you I have hair. It's darkish. Curly. L. 6:11 a.m. Like Carmendor's. 6:11 a.m. Surprisingly, yes. L. 6:12 a.m. Are you as tall as him, too? Like, if I was standing beside you, would I be looking up your nose hairs? 6:14 a.m. That's an awkward question. L. 6:15 a.m. It's also awkward to be so short you can see all the way up into someone's cerebral cortex. but welcome to my life. I laugh quietly, even though there's no one else up here. I feel like this is a secret, so I have to be quiet, ensuring that the universe won't find this little bubble and burst it into nothing. 6:15 a.m. I guess it depends on how short you are. L. 6:16 a.m. I'm like super short. 5'3". The worst height. Always get lost in crowds. Great height for proms, though. No one sees you're alone. Dawn's just beginning to break across the cityscape. Orange light spreads across the night sky like an inferno, stretching pink and yellow fingers across the stars. The sun's so bright I have to squint, but it's rising all the same. I wonder what the sunrise looks like from L's side of the world. 6:16 a.m. I'm 6'1", but I'd be able to see you. Even in a crowd, I'd know. L. 6:17 a.m. Know what? 6:18 a.m. That I'd want to dance with you. It's the delirium from a lack of sleep. I don't really say that, do I? Do I really think that? I remember the moment when I was kissing Jess and her secretive smile and asking me who I had thought about. The truth is, it wasn't just when we kissed that I thought about Elle. I thought about her during every step of that dance. I'd meant those words. Every one of them. I turn around and take a photo of myself against the sunrise. You can't see my face. The sunrise is so bright, I'm just a silhouette. Protecting my image, like Mark has taught me to do for years. But you can see my hair. 6:18 a.m. To prove I'm not bald. One attachment. Good morning. Then I notice him. The guy standing in the doorway, holding up a camera and obscuring his face. I almost drop my phone. Hey! Hey, you! I shout, lurching forward. The stranger whirls around, kicks out my shoe, and slams the door before I get halfway across the roof. I bang my fist into the door, cursing. There's no handle. I'm locked out, on a rooftop, basically about to reenact The Hangover. And what's worse, I'm not hallucinating. There really is a rat on the set of Starfield.
L. The June sun burns against my neck like an iron brand as I sit outside and slowly, painfully make stitches in the blue material. It's miserable. But after the fight with Catherine, there's no way I'm working on the costume at home, and I am not bringing my dad's coat into the grease bomb pumpkin. Besides, I'm way too embarrassed to sew in front of Sage. My phone hums, startling me. The needle slides into the thick shoulder, and also my finger. Ow! I yank out my hand and shove my bleeding finger into my mouth. It stings. It tastes like copper and the magic pumpkin special for the day. A spicy Asian pumpkin fritter. Sage pops her head around the back of the truck.
Yo, everything okay?
My heart leaps into my throat. I shove the coat beside the crate I'm sitting on.
Fine. I'm fine. Just dropped my phone.
She comes around, wiping her hands on her What's Eating You pumpkin apron. Someone's supposed to handle the grill at all times. Sage doesn't care about protocol. And since there's a fried grits balls vendor across the street, no one's even blinking at us. I try and scoot the jacket as far behind me as I can, but her eyes fall on a sleeve snaking out beside my foot.
You're going to get it dirty.
Ashamed, I take the jacket up in my arms, remembering that the magic pumpkin bleeds oil like it's in a food truck version of a Tarantino movie. It's nothing, just something I'm working on. Is my lunch break over yet? I should probably... I try to dodge around Sage, but she steps in front of me. I try the other way,
but she blocks me there, too. I frown. What are you doing?
I know what you're up to, you know.
Her glittery eyes dart to the wimpy sewing kit I bought at the drugstore. I gather the needles and thread into the plastic case, clamp it closed, and stick it under my arm. But Sage won't let me off that easily.
That's really nice material, she says. You can't just tack up the hem. You'll ruin the trim.
I won't, I reply defensively, clutching the jacket tighter. I know what I'm doing. She blinks. My shoulders sag. Well, sorta.
Mm-hmm.
She reaches out to take the jacket. I hesitate for a moment, like Frodo with his ring. But then I remember how much crap Frodo walked into, and I'd rather not end up like Frodo. So I give it to Sage. She takes it by the collar and flips it around, studying the hems inside the back and sleeves. Her magenta lips fold downward, slowly but surely, into a serious frown.
And how exactly are you planning to take this in? Yourself?
I pull out my cell phone with the YouTube video still on the screen.
Oh, no. My eyes! It burns! Sage cries. No, put that away!
I pocket my phone as a blush rushes into my cheeks. She turns the jacket inside out, showing me the seams.
See, you need to take the shoulders apart. Cut it. And then sew it back together if you want to resize it properly. The shoulder pads will be a beast because this is hella fine work.
Is that awe in her voice? And not even bored awe. This is a first.
Is this handmade? Who drafted the pattern?
No one. I mean, someone made it. But it's not really important. I squirm, training my eyes on the grease-stained splotch on my Doc Martens. It's just dumb.
I thought you said that if someone likes something, then it's not dumb. She has me there.
Defeated, I try to grab the jacket out of her hands, but she steps back, turns it right side out again with an expert flip of the wrist, and fits the coat over her shoulders like a cape. The blue accentuates the green of her hair, making her look strange and ethereal and awesome all at the same time. I hate how good it looks on her, oversized and all. Anything would. She wears life like Elvis wore sequins, with no apology laced into the seams. I don't even want to think how it looks on me. Clownish? Frumpy? I'm sure I would be the laughing stock of the cosplay competition.
It's really well made, she goes on. Is this a costume for something?
I sigh. Yeah. Starfield? The Federation Prince? Sage bunches her lips together.
I didn't know you dressed up.
It's called cosplaying, and I don't. I mean, I haven't. But I want to. I lower my eyes again to my shoes, and the words come out in a torrent. There's this cosplay competition in like 2 weeks at ExcelsiCon in Atlanta, and the prize is 2 tickets to the premiere of Starfield and some cash, And it's a long story, but I really want to win. I need to win. I mean, I probably won't, but my dad said that the impossible is only impossible if you don't even try. So I want to try. I swallow the lump rising in my throat. But, yeah, I can't sew. She cocks her head and doesn't say anything for a long moment. My cheeks begin to burn red. I spin around toward the pumpkin.
Never mind. It was stupid. Forget I said anything. Sounds like fun.
I stop. Turn around. Sage. The girl who barely even looks at me while we're working wants to help me?
Right.
That'll happen when Princess Amara comes out of the Black Nebula, i.e., never. She takes off the coat gingerly.
You're in luck because I need more pieces for my portfolio.
Really? The service bell chirps. A customer at the truck window. Neither of us moves to leave. She hands the jacket back to me. The starch is almost gone. The coattails droopy. It doesn't smell like Dad much anymore. Or like me and vegan burgers and that particular musty old coat smell. When I first got this harebrained idea,